You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Retail Roundup. It's so good to be here again. I missed last week, but I'm glad to be back this week. I am Glenda Geek, founder of the Horse Radio Network and host of Horses in the Morning, one of the longest-running daily podcasts in the world at 15, almost 16 years. And we are here today to help you in your retail journey. And also, this is for manufacturers, I would say, in our industry as well today. Especially manufacturers today, I think, applies really well. I want to apologize a little bit for my voice. I don't know what happened this morning. I just started losing it. So hopefully I can get through today. We're going to make Greg do all the talking, actually. So this is the Retail Roundup, your go-to virtual hub for all things retail. Join panel discussions, learn from webinars, share your thoughts, ask questions, and connect with the community. We highly recommend you join the Retail Roundup Facebook group. Just search for Retail Roundup on Facebook. Join that group. It's kind of where the conversations happen and where we make the announcements about what's coming up and all the different things. In today's session, we have Greg Carnes. Greg, this is the first time we're talking about this topic and all the ones that we've done, so I'm glad you're here. He's going to explain how authentic, well-planned photography helps retail buyers and social media managers capture attention, boost engagement, and ultimately influence purchasing decisions. And I'll throw manufacturers in there as well. Greg reveals how strategy-driven storytelling resonates with customers. His client list includes Master Hatters of Texas, Twisted X, Fisher Space Pen Company, and Desert Companion Magazine. Hey, Greg. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Where are you located? Well,
So I am in the Las Vegas Valley. Actually, I am just outside of Las Vegas in Henderson.
Oh, wow. Okay. Know exactly where you're at. Been through Henderson. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you like 120 degrees in the summer then?
Not really. Actually, we're starting to get a little bit cooler weather. So it's
probably it's down to 110? You're good.
Yeah,
no, it's down to 110?
Yeah. Most people probably would be like, this is hot. But this is starting to get tolerable now.
I'm in the other hot place, Florida. So, you know, we're still in the 90s and I'm going, I really wanted to cool off at any point now. You and I are coming into what I call our summer. We are completely reversed. We look forward to those winter months, you know, it's our summertime. So, So we're going to be talking a lot about photography as it relates to retailers and also manufacturers today. And you have a tagline, visuals that connect, stories that carry weight. What does that mean for retailers specifically? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so, you know, visuals that connect, really that's coming down to creating imagery that is going to connect with consumers on an emotional level. Probably most people in sales and marketing, they would know that, you know, emotions trigger, whether they're good or bad, they trigger in one way or the other. And if you can trigger people on an emotional level to want to take action and make a sale, that's what you want. So the visuals are very much about, you know, connecting people in that fashion. And then stories that carry weight, really that what I'm saying in that is what I create, especially in a narrative scenario, like lifestyle imagery, what I'm trying to do is really generate ROI, right? Are those narratives or those stories going to translate to some kind of an emotional connection with a potential consumer where they're going to want to go on your website and they're going to want to hit click and add to cart or go to when they're in their Western retail store and they see a product and they're like, oh, I remember that. I remember that campaign or I remember that image. And then again, so it's really about connecting on an emotional level, and the carrying weight is really ROI.
So in dealing with video and audio in my case, I feel like it's easier to tell a story. How hard is it to tell a story with an image?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It can be challenging. And I think the longer I do this, the more I improve in that area. We can talk about this more, but for me, it's all about strategy, you know, in terms of what I'm creating. So, you know, if all we're looking for is like a hero shot and it just needs to look pretty, you know, fine, you know, I can do that. But if it's got other purposes or intentions, you know, in terms of what the end goal is, then I'm going to probably put a lot more energy and effort into figuring out how to convey that in that single image, right? Or if it's a series, like in a campaign, then I'll make sure that they all follow suit, right, and work together. So I think there is a lot more that, I don't know if it's more, it's just a different effort between, you know, photography and video, because video obviously tells the narrative and does the same thing.
And this is why professional photographers are so valuable, because you have the experience in trying to tell that story.
Yeah, I think it is important, you know, and you see it in a lot of brands. It's kind of like going to a website or seeing a social media feed. You can tell who has quality images that accurately represent that brand and those that don't. And that's a big differentiator, right? The more professional and the more strategic and the more dialed in, you know, a product looks like and is represented, I think that's conveying credibility, really, in the consumer's mind. So, yeah.
I'll tell you a perfect example of the difference in photography is if you're watching the video right now, my lighting sucks and yours is really good. And I know, and I've been wanting to do something about my lighting, and it's just, there's the difference between a professional and a not, right? And lighting is one of the most important ingredients of a good photograph. But here is a perfect example of not so good audio guy, really good lighting guy. So,
well, thank you.
You talk about authentic. By the way, I'm going to be getting some advice on what lights I need to buy.
Yeah.
So you talk about authentic imagery. What do you mean by authentic imagery? You've mentioned that once or twice now.
Yeah, I think when I'm referring to authentic imagery, it's twofold, because I take e-commerce, you know, product images, right? So that it's just the product by itself shown in different angles and views, but properly lit, accurate color representation, right? So in a way, that's authentic, right? I mean, you're showing, you're depicting that product as it truly appears, right? So there's no misconception, you know, somebody goes online and goes through a website or, you know, is looking through a printed catalog or whatever, right? I think authenticity also relates to lifestyle imagery of that product. And especially in the Western industry, authenticity is, I would say, paramount. And it's, you know, having grown up in that environment and that lifestyle, you can see the difference between somebody who actually lives it and knows it and someone that maybe aspires to it and doesn't get it, right?
Or just a model they hired out of the city to do the picture.
Right. Yeah. And
we make fun of that all the time, by the way, on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is the brands who, you know, and horse people have eagle eyes. We can look at a picture and go, that ain't a horse person.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I kind of, to your point, you know, I think it really comes down to the type of imagery that you're trying to create. I've worked with models and they're amazing because, like, they're doing all the heavy lifting. They know the right poses and they can give you variety and they can look amazing. If you're doing something, so maybe fashion forward, right? Or, you know, catalog type work, right? But if you're going to go lifestyle and try to create more of that authenticity, then they can be a little bit more challenging with a model. And honestly, like, I like working with both and I enjoy both, if that makes sense. There's something about working with someone who's a rancher, you know, who is just letting me almost be like a fly on a wall in a way, right? And just experience their livelihood and their day-to-day and be able to try to capture that authentically. There's something magical about that. It's not to say that there still isn't a lot of work and attention to detail and planning, but it definitely shows through, to your point, you know, without people know what's authentic and not. So,
and keeping it authentic consistently. Consistency is the key there, because, you know, with the brand, because they come to expect certain things of that brand. And if you violate that, right, they're going to give you one shot to violate that. It's amazing how quickly that image can go away. that brand image that you've built all these years as a right. brand, whether it's retail or whether it's manufacturer, it can go away so quickly. So it's very important to always keep it in mind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know we didn't really touch on this, but so my background is actually in brand development. I used to primarily what I did was I did graphic and structural design. And I worked in the corporate environment for many years before going out on my own. And with that, I was working with some of the biggest associations and corporations around the country. And everything was brand forward, right? Everything was about the brand and what does that represent? And so to your point, you know, when I go into a project and I'm looking at something like that, it's really about the brand first. Like, I want to know that brand. I want to know the positioning of that brand. I want to know the affiliation of that brand. I want to know the personality of that brand. Those three components are like, if you think of it, and there's another well-known marketer who coined this phrase, spherical branding. But imagine your brand is a sphere, a ball. And on the outer shell is personality, positioning, affiliation, and the core of it, that's your brand. Well, if I have that as kind of like my guiding light and I can work with people who, you know, work for that business or represent that product and that brand, then we can be strategic, right? And then everything else follows suit. So anyways, I kind of went on a rant there, but that's how I frame it.
So with most retailers, if they have an online store, you know, website, they're taking the manufacturer's pictures, whatever they are, and they're plugging them in there. What do you say to them? How important is our photographs for certain products or certain imagery to a retail brand getting their own done?
Well, I think it's very important. So if you're just doing e-commerce or just purely retail representation of your product, without lifestyle, without like big campaigns or anything like that, I think it's still critical. I mean, again, it comes down to consistency and accuracy, you know, and that representation. And if it doesn't do that and it doesn't do it at a high level, it shows. People see it instantly. Like, I'm sure that you've experienced it where you've seen products or product listings somewhere and it's been, you know, it's just been mismatched, right? There's certain components that have different angles or different lighting or different crops or whatever it might be. And all of a sudden you're like, well, that's not good. Like, what does that mean? That doesn't look professional, right? But if you go to a listing or a catalog or you have something where it's really dialed in, right? And then everything's all consistent, right? You've got multiple products, but they're all shot in the same lighting. They're all got the same angles to them. They're cropped the same. That consistency instantly positions your product and your brand at a much higher level. So, yeah, anyways.
So the average retailer, how can they do good photography but keep it affordable? Or is if you get a retailer that contacts you, obviously you're not going to take pictures of all of their products, right? So what do you recommend that they do? Are you working on certain aspects of photography for their website? What are you working on?
Okay. That's a great question. Well, I actually do both. So two of my long-term clients is Fisher Space Pen and Master Hatters of Texas. And so for both those companies, I do both. So if they come out with a new product, I'm taking it. And initially, we just, you know, we kind of bit the bullet and I photographed their entire collection, you know, again, for that consistency and accuracy. And then as new products come up, you know, I'll create more e-com imagery for that listing or more lifestyle content for that listing. So I wanted to clarify that. So I do both. And I actually would encourage you, if you have an entire collection of products, do it all at once, you know, and do it at that consistency level. I think that's going to be really, really key there. And then if you're doing it in-house or you're doing it on a budget yourself, you can still do it. You know, when I started doing this, I literally got pushed into it by Fisher Space Pen. They were like, well, don't you do photography? And I was like, I take photos of my family, you know, on vacation, you know. And they're like, yeah, but you're really creative and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so they kept pushing me. And then they were like, look, we're going to pay you. We're going to pay you to take photos of our products. So I was like, all right. So I can honestly say, I got to learn it quick. Right. And so, and it's not to say I didn't make mistakes. And I started very conservatively, you know, in terms of what I was using for equipment and all of that. So you can do it. I will say this, lighting is key. Light quality is key. So I'm not saying you got to have a studio with, you know, fully decked out with all these different strobe lighting and modifiers and things like that. You don't. Natural light is beautiful. I mean, it's actually the most flattering light, especially during golden hours. So if you can harness that and you don't want to deal with strobe lights, then you can do that. You're just now at the mercy of natural light and where that's available. You can use reflectors and modifiers for bouncing and shaping light. Again, you could get a silver reflector or a matte reflector or foam board that's white, gray, or black for bounce cards. You can do amazing things just with those little tools. And then, you know, again, I think you do need some quality equipment, you know, so a good camera doesn't have to break the bank, but a good camera, a digital camera, and then being proficient with post editing. You know, that's the other component. It's funny, a lot of people think that they see a beautiful image that's like, you know, out just purely in camera, right? They clicked and that was it. And I always strive for that, but there isn't a single image that I produce that doesn't have a post editing, you know, and so knowing those programs, whatever you're using, I mean, that's another big component to that. So
we always found that the smaller the product, the harder it was to take a picture of too. Get down to jewelry level. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Try a Fisher Space Pen. They're a little chrome bullet pen that's elliptical. Like there is no corners on this thing. It's like the most reflective. Man, I cut my teeth on that one and I about lost all of my hair on that. So, yeah.
Well, you know, something else that's out there now that you and I both have to deal with in different ways, and that's AI. AI is something that is not going away, right? I mean, it's actually getting, it itself is getting better at what it does, and I don't think it's going to get worse. So right. Where are you at? Do you have clients talking to you about AI? What's the story?
Yeah, you know, I kind of got into AI early on, like even before it really popped, just because I didn't want to be in the dark on it. And so I started playing around with it, mainly like ChatGPT. And it, in short order, I quickly identified like, wow, this is an amazing asset for myself, for my own business. Cause it was basically giving me access and information quickly and accurately that really would require like a team full of people. So exactly. Right. So it definitely allowed me to do more, which is amazing. But as it relates to what I do in terms of product photography and lifestyle imagery, I feel like there's still use for it. In fact, anyone that does any kind of digital photography, they know that there's software already out there that has built-in AI for post-editing, right? In fact, a few years ago, it was there. We just didn't know it. We just thought it was a feature or a tool in our toolkit, right? But it was AI.
Perfect example is 10 years ago, cutting the background out of an image shot was a nightmare. It took forever.
There you go.
Now it's like that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's there. It's not going away. I think it's an asset in many ways. I just caution the use of it solely, you know, in its entirety, especially when it comes to visual representation. And I keep going back to, you know, the Western industry, you know, that's so based on heritage, right? And, you know, just rooted in authenticity and craftsmanship and real people, right? And lifestyles. And I think just like we were talking about before, where anyone in the living in this world of the Western industry, right? They can identify a real person versus someone who's posing or pretending to be, right? I think the same thing is true with AI. Now, I don't have a crystal ball. It may eventually get to a point where it's indistinguishable, you know, and that's fine. You know, if and when that day it comes, so be it. But I think that from a, again, from a brand perspective, if you're portraying your brand or your product as being authentic, as being genuine, honest, you know, having integrity, craftsmanship, all of those things are great qualities and great, you know, positionings for any product or brand. But the minute you start to go and go over that line of AI, where it's like you're leaning too heavy into that, where it's like it's not real and it's artificial, and it's, you know, I think you're walking a thin line. And I just caution anybody on that. And I've had those kind of conversations with my clients, because I think it's something that all stakeholders need to be aware of and really need to consider carefully. It's so tempting to just go, oh, I'll just generate this. You know, there it is. You got to really be careful what you're doing, you know, and be mindful of what that brand represents. So,
and I think for me too, the product descriptions written by AI, you can pick those out in 2 seconds. And there's nothing that annoys me more as a product description written by AI, because I right away think you don't know your own product well enough to write your own description. That's my thought process when I see an AI written description. You know, I can be wrong, but that's the first thing I think is you don't know it well enough to write your own.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to kind of what we've been talking about, right? I mean, you need to know your product, you need to know your brand, you know, and if you know what that is, you know, even if you're using AI or other tools in your kit, just don't be lazy, you know, use it as a tool or as an aid, but still be mindful, you know, if you need to edit or you need to make adjustments, whatever it might be, you know, do so. At least that's the approach I take. You know, it's not a one and done kind of thing for me.
Right. Well, and as you said, it goes, you can get nailed very, look at Cracker Barrel. You know, it doesn't take long for it to go south, right? It doesn't take long. One mistake.
Yeah. You know, and I'd hate to see that happen with, especially like a legacy brand, right? I mean, it kind of cuts deep when you see that happen, you know, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So
what trends do you see in photography as far as retail marketing and things are concerned here over the next couple of years? Obviously, I wanted to ask you that question right after we talked about AI, right?
Oh,
you know, because I think it's the two tie in together in a way. We're not going to be able to avoid that.
No, you're right. Wow. This is like a loaded question for me. So since we just touched on AI, let me express that. So I have used AI visually, not for final results, but for concepting. So there have been times, especially I'm going to use Fisher Space Pen Company as an example. You know, I've been shooting their products for 15 years and many of them numerous times in similar scenarios. And it's difficult for me to kind of come up with something new compositionally or lighting. You know, it's not that I don't have all those wheelhouses, you know, available, but
over 15 years, you've used a lot of them on the same.
I've used, yes. Yeah. And I think anybody, you know, in that space would feel the same way. So I've started adapting AI, not all the time, but occasionally for concepting, you know, trying to figure out stylistically lighting and, you know, color composition, things like that. I know other professional photographers have done this as well. And
so you're sort of using it as what Walt Disney would have called a storyboard, right? You're kind of storyboarding it.
Right. Okay. Storyboarding it. It does help in that capacity. Again, I don't always use it, and I might see an element or a component that I'm like, oh, that's, I hadn't thought of that angle, or I hadn't thought of that lighting scenario. So that's something that on the AI side, but in terms of like trends, marketing trends, as it relates to photography, I hate the word trend because I don't like trends. The only time I like trends is if I'm the one setting the trends or my client's the one setting it, right? Because if you're just jumping on a trend bandwagon, then there's no differentiator between you, right? You're just riding this wave and you're not distinguishing your product or your service or your brand from the competition, right? You're going to look like everybody else. And so trend is a trigger word for me for that reason. I have a tendency to lean more on authenticity and accurately representing that product or that brand in their light and in their style that's representative to them, as opposed to doing a trend, you know, at least aesthetically. Caveat to that is cinematic is a big thing right now. And I think it has become more prevalent.
What do you mean by that?
So you're starting to see campaigns, both photographic and video, that are being shot and framed and composed very cinematically. So think of your favorite Western. You know, there's probably at least one iconic movie scene where you're like, oh man, that was such a great shot. Like, look at that, you know, mountains in the background, a horse, you know, whatever the scenario, right? You're seeing more and more of that because one, I think it's part of our culture and there's nostalgia behind it. But then again, it's an emotional connection. So like, it's one thing to create something that is just non-cinematic, but maybe triggers emotion. You may connect, right? But if you can capture something that's cinematic and maybe you have some positive relationship or emotional connection with that's been in a movie or something that you've seen or something to that effect, it's yet another layer, right? Another opportunity to try to make that connection. So that's leaving out the fact that it's, you know, beautifully composed and lit and settings are awesome and all that. So that's a big thing. I think vertical short form video reels and stories, that's obviously very prevalent. I don't see that going away. I think
hopefully it gets better.
Yeah. You know, I'm a perfectionist. So I have a tendency to like want only the best of the best. And so getting it my head around this kind of iPhone, you know, photos or video is a hard one for me, but I see the validity in it because it doesn't look polished or over polished, right? So what I
it's actually is, authentic.
It's authentic in its own right, right?
Yeah.
And I think there are obviously vehicles for that, you know, TikTok and Instagram, and you know, there's platforms where that should be, and I think it's a great vehicle for that. I wouldn't recommend using that for all of your imagery or your e-commerce or your
Here campaign. It comes back to the, depends on what the brand is, right? Doesn't it always come back to that too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It goes full circle, you know, but those are definitely trends. I would say this though, if you're going to do like iPhone stuff, make sure that you're marrying that with some hero content, right? Something that's, you know, top tier professional, it rounds it out. You know, and so it's like on one level, they're like, man, this is a quality product. Look at this imagery. On the other hand, it's like, oh, wow, look at this. They're real. They're like, they're genuine. Like these are real. This is real people, real brand. Right. It kind of covers both that way. So,
you know, getting back to cinematic, what you were talking about earlier, the car mm-hmm. companies are a perfect example of that, right? Driving the car off the rugged road to the top of the mountain. And, you know, they've right. been good at that for the last couple of years. But the one who's best at telling a story in a cinematic way recently, over the last, I would say, 10 years, has been the Clydesdales and Anheuser-Busch, right? They have done those commercials so well.
That right.
You expect that now, right?
Right, absolutely.
They came back with anything that was not that good, you're like, what happened? You know, so.
Yeah, it's an emotional connection. I mean, yep. I can remember actually going to the state fair, you know, as a kid and seeing their Clydesdale there, you know, all done up, you know, and I was just like, wow, you know, blew my mind. And to your point, like every time I see an ad or a commercial spot, whatever it might be, it's nostalgia, right? It's emotional connection.
You're back to being that kid.
Yeah. I'm that kid again, right? And I'm just awestruck, you know, standing by those horses. It's the same thing, you know, but yeah. Yep.
And they went through a period several years ago where they got away from that a little bit. And all of a sudden, you know, they discovered that didn't work. You know, again, they got bit by it and they went back to that storytelling and those heartwarming visuals of the dogs and the horses and the whole thing. Yeah. Because the other didn't work.
Yeah. Well, I think it's about knowing your base, right? You know, who's your base audience, you know, and unfortunately, I think there's been a lot of brands that haven't followed that, you know, as their guiding light. But I think that that's a big component, you know, to kind of go off topic. But yeah.
Yeah. It's the same in podcasting. That's the first thing we teach is know who's your listener. Who is our listener? Who are we catering our show to, right?
Right.
Because there's a certain percentage in your world and mine that aren't going to like anything you do. We're not catering to them. We're catering to the 80% who are looking to like what we do. There's always going to be the 20%, right? And a lot of times, though, brands focus on that 20% when they should be focusing on the 80. And that's in your world and mine, both. Yeah.
Well said.
It's funny. Art's art, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Whether it's audio or visual or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think it's a beautiful thing. Like I can't imagine doing anything else for my career, you know, than being, you know, in the creative industry and field. It's just how I'm wired. Right.
And yet we're both doing the same thing. We're both telling a story.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. We're both telling a story. We both are doing the same job, just in a little bit different way. So on that note, if somebody wanted to hire you, what do they do?
Well, they can go to my website. It's my name, Greg Carnes.
Two G's, G-R-E-G-G.
Got it. That's correct. Yeah.
I messed it up earlier, so I know.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. Yeah, Greg with two G's, Carnes.com. And yeah, just check me out. Give me a ring.
I assume you go all over. Doesn't matter where.
Yep. You know, I've traveled domestically, but, you know, I also have a passport. So if there's somebody out there that's looking for some international work, I am available. So, yeah.
Love Sounds the opportunity. Good. GregCarnes.com. That's G-R-E-G-G, Carnes.com is where you can find Greg. Thank you for joining us today. It's been fun.
Thank you, Glenn. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I'll be back again next week with a new video for you with a new topic, and you can stay up to date on everything that we do. As I said, just go to the Facebook group. Wessa also has a YouTube channel. You can find it, Wessa Trade Show YouTube channel, and they also have a website, wessatradeshow.com. The next trade show, of course, is going to be in January. That's the big one everybody gets excited for. I'm hoping to go to that one as well in Dallas, so we hope to see you all there. You can find my show, Horses in the Morning. We're there 5 days a week the last 15 years. We have a lot of fun over there. It's kind of like morning drive radio for the horse world. We don't take ourselves too seriously. We're there to entertain and make you, for an hour, hour and a half every day, forget about life. That's what we're there for, and to chat about horses. So check me out. Just search for Horses in the Morning on any podcast player. Thanks again, Greg. Take care.
Thank you. Take care.